Blog Talk Radio.
All right. It's Lawrence J. King in my house. And today it is a pleasure and an honor to have with us Jennifer Bennett. She wrote a book called Standing Still in a Culture of Mass Shootings at a Navy Yard. She's a shooting survivor. She was shot point blank with a shotgun and lived to tell about it. She has an amazing book out there, and today is an honor and a privilege to have her with us on our show. Like I said before, she sustained a point-blank shotgun blast, and she survived and lived to tell about it. So other than me talking about my radio show is nationwide and is listened to all around the world in places like Belgium, Australia, Indonesia, and blah, blah, blah. Let's get her on the show and find out about her exciting book and better meter. And here we go. So without further ado, welcome to Book Talk Radio. Jennifer, how are you doing today?
I'm great. It's great to be with you. Thank you for the invitation to spend time with you and your audience.
Absolutely. And so, let's before we get into the book and the Q&A's portion, let's talk about your life, how it all began, where you grew up, you know, married, single, all that stuff. Bring us up to current day status, if you will.
Well, I'm married to a retired Marine colonel, and he now works for the federal government. And I was in the Navy as a federal employee for 26 years. I was in and around the Department of Defense industry for almost 40 years. And I have, we have a daughter and three grandchildren, ages 14, 8, and 2.5. And the son-in-law is a former Marine as well, so we're a Marine Corps family, so a Marine and Navy family. And I live in Virginia, and the husband, his name is Philip. We hope to have him retire within the next year, and then we're off to Tennessee outside of Knoxville to hopefully get a farm and do rescuing of animals and people and helping animals and people get a new start in life. So that's the overall view of our lives, and we stay busy, and we're a people of faith. And so that's a little bit about my family and I.
Amazing. Sounds like a good time and some good plans. So,
yes.
Standing Still, the Culture of Mass Shootings, a Navy Yard shooting survivor. How in your mind did this happen to you?
Well, as I identify as a person of faith, so in my world, God plants my feet on a path, and he has a purpose for us. Every morning I ask God to open the doors that are mine, that he promised me for his purpose, and place me where he wants me to go for his purposes. And that morning clearly was a purpose that he had for my life and for my family's life. And arrived at work, a normal day, and then about 8:10, the shooting started. I didn't know there was a shooter. Fire alarm. This went out the door based on the fire alarm, and then I walked into the shooter. So that's, you know, that's basically what happened initially, and it was not something that I saw on my radar for my life, but God did.
I understand. So how did he get those weapons into the building without being detected?
The building is at the Washington Navy Yard, which is on the east side on the river of the Capitol. It is a federal reservation with guards, either Marine guards or contract guards. You have to have ID and clearances to get onto the base. And the shooter, his name is Alexis, had a badge, had a clearance, and he came on base and parked his car and put his weapon and all the ammo in a bag. And when he came into the building, he swiped his card on the farthest turnstile to come into the building so that the bag was on his right side walking along the wall. The guard that day was a friend. He was not your normal guard, contract guard. He was a former detective from the Metropolitan Police who had just returned from Iraq from training their police force, and he was looking for other opportunities. So guard duty was just an interim, but the shooter walked so that he could not see, you know, that his bag carried anything specific. The yard, our building specifically, on occasion does what's called RAMS, and that is a process where when you come in the building, the security staff and the guards search your bags, and just like TSA, looking for contraband, classified drugs, whatever it is. It's random. A RAMS means it's random. Our building didn't do it very often because it's not a public building. Unlike the Capitol building or some of those federal buildings, it does not have a metal detector. You don't have to go through that process. So he did not have to go through that process that day. They did not have a RAM that day. And so he walked into the building. He had access, so it's called insider threat. He went to the elevator, and the video in the lobby at that point in time, you can see he's carrying a very large bag. And he went up to the fourth deck, fourth floor, and went to the men's room and unloaded his weapon and then loaded it with his ammo. So that's how he got into the building.
Wow. So I personally, I've been shot before, shot at, but the shots always miss me. I'm paramilitary myself. You, on the other hand, you were shot point blank by a shotgun and were hit wide open by the buckshot. You should not be alive, but you are. So how?
Well, that's where I go back to what? I'm sorry.
I say, how or why do you think you're still alive?
Well, the why is my faith. As I said, you know, God has a plan for each of us. If you're a person of faith, you will understand that. And his purpose for me that day was to survive, to live through it, to see the shooter and be able to discuss active shooters, insider threat, Second Amendment, and who was the shooter that day, and how did he get into our building, and where were the flaws in the clearance process for him to maintain a clearance? He had to have gone through the same background checks that I did, and so God left me alive to have conversations about in faith, and then cultural conversations about toxic culture within our culture. And within organizations. And so I was where I was supposed to be. And as I stood on the top step in the stairwell, and he stood at the bottom of the stairwell, which is 10 steps, when he pointed the weapon at me, I was unafraid because God has made each of us with gifts and personalities and capabilities through experiences. And mine is a warrior. I've never been afraid of anyone or anything. And I was a complete peace. I know what it means to walk the 23rd Psalm and be the presence of God looking at death. And he allowed me to see the shooter and see him for the person, not the evil he was doing. In my talks, I talk about the shooter. He was a man. He was not evil. But he was so broken that evil could use him to do what evil wanted to do, and that was come in and destroy. And I was allowed to look him right in the eye, and I saw the person, and my heart broke for him because he'd come to die. And that just hurts my heart that he was so broken and lost that no one in the building, his organization or mine, recognized he needed help. So that's the why and where I was and the purpose.
I understand. So what is your take on the U.S. government constantly trying to take our guns away or disarm the citizens of America?
Well, I'm a Second Amendment proponent, whether I was shot or not. I had just purchased a Kimber Solo and was taking lessons. And so it wasn't the weapon that walked up the stairs and did harm. It was just a tool. He could have come in with a machete. He could have come in with any other kind of weapon. And through the surprise of attack, because in a building that's secure and a base that's secure, you do not expect someone to bring in a weapon and then use it. So he could have used any weapon and done great harm. So the weapon he chose that day was a sawed-off shotgun, and then the 9mm that was on the guard that he killed. That is not what we should be going after. And so the government is driven politically, specifically more one side in the politics than the other, in an effort to remove the citizenry of our constitutional privilege of the Second Amendment, which really is about tyranny. It's not about hunting. It's really about protecting ourselves from a tyrannical government that wants to take us over, and we have the right to bear arms against the government if they've become tyrannical, and they have become tyrannical. They are owning us in a way that the Constitution never allowed them to be. And so for those on the political side who use active shooter events to promote their world political view of countering the Second Amendment, that's puppetry to me. They're using people who are willing to be on their worldview of, in our culture, called anti-weapon, anti-Second Amendment, and they pull at the heartstrings by using Sandy Hook or the high school shooters. I will tell you that the politicals could not use the Washington Navy Yard because it wasn't an AR-15. It was a sawed-off shotgun. And the political vice president at the time, Joe Biden, in February, just prior to that, stood in a conference, a media conference, and stated very clearly, "I've told my wife, Jill, she should just get a shotgun and stand on the back porch and shoot because you do less damage with a sawed-off shotgun." What it demonstrates is their cluelessness in regards to, A, what is a weapon? What do you use a weapon for? And why would the citizens need an AR-15? If we get into a tyrannical government as we have right now, they're going to come with all kinds of weapons, their own citizens. And so a citizen needs and must have access to those kinds of weapons just to support the Second Amendment of battling your government's tyranny. So that's how I see the Second Amendment and the government political worldview of trying to take our weapons and using every ploy they can so that they can demonstrate they have the right to. Every country that has given up their weapons, their crime has increased. In the UK, they took the weapons. Well, then it became knife attacks, became the predominant tool. So a weapon like a gun is really just a tool. It doesn't walk up the stairs itself. It requires a person to determine that's the tool they want to use, and that's what they use. So that's the view I have on the Second Amendment and the political worldview and culture we live in right now.
Well, hoorah. And that's keeping it real, because I believe the same way, because guns don't kill people. People with guns kill people, and usually some deranged idiot person that does that. So, that's a excellent take on it. Yeah, I support that, and I'm totally all about that, too. But let me ask you this. Do you believe the shooter who shot you was mentally unstable?
He was. He was mentally ill. He'd known for being mentally ill his whole life. His sister, in a series that was put out called America Under Fire, a perspective of survivors, family, and EMS, police, and fire, with their take on mass shootings. And so his sister was interviewed, and she talked about his mental illness. And despite she and her sister talking to their parents, and their parents were divorced, the parents decided to look away. And so he was a storm brewing, and he eventually made it into the Navy. The Navy did the same thing. He had mental issues. Instead of dealing with the mental issues, his commanding officers just wanted him drummed out of the Navy. He eventually got out of the Navy, and everywhere he lived, he had interactions with the police using a weapon, not necessarily directly connected to the law enforcement or the legal system. When someone is arrested, it doesn't flow into our clearance process. The clearance process requires the person to be honest when they're filling out their clearance paperwork. And he left his arrest off. He was arrested for shooting out the tires in a neighbor's car, for shooting the ceiling with a weapon. And so he fell through the cracks. The person investigating him, because he did not fill out the paperwork and he didn't show up in the police system, it turned out the police system coded his arrest incorrectly, so he didn't show up as a weapon offense. So he's able to get a clearance. His organization that hired him knew he was mentally ill, and a couple of months prior to the shooting, he had a 30 days episode of mental illness that his direct supervisor was very much aware of. He went to another Navy base in Rhode Island, and the police were called on him, and he called the police on himself, and the base was contacted, and because he was a contractor, the base security said, well, he's not our problem. He's not a federal employee. So he got sent home, and the company put him on what I call administrative leave. They did not remove his clearance, nor did they notify the Navy, NAVC security, that he was having mental issues, which is a requirement by law. So the Navy can make a determination whether they want him back on the base, and to deal with the contractor, make sure the contractor was dealing with this mentally ill employee. He went away. He came back. In one of the reports that was written by Issa, Senator Issa, I believe, he identified that the supervisor made a determination that he was okay, but there was no evidence that he got mental help, nor did the organization make sure he had mental health. They didn't do the reporting required, and she put him back in play. And within a couple of weeks of putting back in play, he came in with the weapon and killed 12 people, wounded 4. So in my world, his supervisor is culpable. She's culpable. The organization, facility security officer, who had to have known he was mentally ill, is culpable. He or she specifically is required by their job description and oath to report mental illness in their employees so that their clearances can be pulled until the employee is demonstrating that they are well. So those two people are fully culpable for the deaths.
I understand. Yes. That would be a correct statement. Pull those clearances. So we're talking live to Jennifer Bennett, talking about her book, Standing Still in a Culture of Mass Shootings, a Navy Yard shooting survivor. So, Jennifer, let me ask you this. Why do you think and or believe our culture has increased in mass shootings?
Well, one is the culture. removing God out of our culture. When a child doesn't know their value, and we play with their hearts and minds and their souls, we're going to get broken people, broken little people, broken junior hires, broken all the way up to adults. If they don't know their value and they don't understand the value, then they're not going to understand value of life. It goes along with removal of faith as an overarching core value of our nation, even though we're relatively built on that, starting with the Puritan, the removal in the 60s by Madeleine Murray O'Hare, Supreme Court ruling to remove the mention of God out of school was the start of the downward spiral, and you can track it. In one of my talks, I did some research, and I could track the downward slide of our culture from the 60s to when I was shot, of the increase of mass shootings. It exists. It's there. If you tell someone that they're not valuable because you can kill a baby in utero, that child has no value, that they're just tissue, then you send a subliminal message to your children and culture that no one has value. If you elevate animals, now I'm an animal lover, as I identified, rescuing them is important, but if you elevate animals to equal to us and that we're just an animal, you devalue the very soul and nature of God's creation. And so you roll all of this together in our culture, and you break the foundation of the core values of a people. So we no longer have a basic core value that's the same, and then divisiveness engages. And so we, as a people, didn't fight for it. So when the Supreme Court took God out of school, I didn't see the faith community rise up and say no and fight for it. When abortion through Roe versus Wade, which was a lie, became the law of the land, I didn't see the people of faith rise up and fight for it. You just keep picking, and eventually you allow it to erode until it's eroded. And that's where we are now. It's eroded. And then some of those shootings, in my research, some of the shootings were done purposely through the government agencies. They weren't just some random person doing mass shootings. These were people set up to do that so that they could stir the pot where they want the culture to go. So there's some that are real, like the one in ours, although he did believe that the government, specifically the Navy, was beaming thoughts into his head, which is actually, we technically can do that. So it just comes down to a multiple of kinds and types of things that are occurring in our culture and the things that our government can do that the common person is not aware of, unless you start digging and doing your own research to see the capability the government has and how it can influence an individual. So mass shootings come from cultural. Mass shootings come from lack of faith in our culture. And then it also comes driven by federal agencies who, that's their business.
I get it. So, Jennifer, where can you pick up the amazing copy of your book and or be invited as a guest speaker to a certain engagement or arrangement? Plug that information, will you?
You can go to Guiding Light Books. That's guidinglightbooks.com, I believe. And the publisher can contact me, and you can, order the books for him. You could email me directly and ask, and you can put out my email on your website if you wish, and I'll send you a book directly. I own all my books. The publisher is a small boutique publisher, and I paid for all my books, so I own them all. And so I have a small stash that I'm happy to send to someone if they like it. So they can either go to guidingbooks.com or they can email me directly.
Got it. Yeah, I've been reading your book. It's pretty awesome. And so
thank you.
Where can they get in touch with you for a speaking engagement? Is it the same thing, an email, a phone number?
Either go to guidinglightbooks.com or just email me directly. I'm, as you and I have discussed, unless there's travel required, I'm free. If it's local in the Virginia, D.C., Maryland area that I can drive to, I'm free. If it's travel, then you have to – I go wherever God opens the door. If he opens the door, I promised him I would go.
I heard that. So let's get back to the moment at hand. What was your exact emotion when you made eye contact with the shooter?
My heart broke. Because I'm not afraid and I was in a place of peace, I did just opposite of what everybody else says people do, fight or flight. I was neither. I was at peace, and that's why standing still. Because God tells us to stand still and know he's God, to be at peace. And I was at peace. And because I was unafraid and I'm really a warrior at heart, God allowed me to look into Alexis's eyes, and my heart broke for him. You can hear it still to this day, 9 years later. It breaks my heart to know that we have people who are wandering amongst us who are that broken and unnoticed. And we fail as a culture to really figure out how to help people who are struggling mentally with mental illness, whether they end up on the street, whether it's PTSD. We as a culture must find a process or ways to help folks like this that find themselves so broken that nobody has value to include themselves. And that's who I saw. So my heart broke for him.
I heard that. How did you deal with the emotional aftermath after being shot?
What emotional aftermath, because I don't have PTSD. That's the other amazing thing is not only did I live and no one in the military, law enforcement, the emergency services, have they ever seen someone take a sawed-off shotgun, double-aught shot directly, keep their arm, and not have PTSD? Because to me, I was where I belonged. I saw my purpose. And when you know your purpose, you can walk through anything. And I also understand that God walks you through things. He doesn't get you stuck in things. So I didn't really have any emotion. I never cried over any of it. What I cried over is pain. I had a lot of pain. I had 3 surgeries. I have another one still to go, but I've put it off even though it's been 9 years. I still have one more to go. But I have never cried over that day because I see it, and a lot of people won't understand this, but I saw it as a day of joy because God presented me an opportunity to serve him with purpose.
I get it. So if you were brought back to that moment again, what would you do different?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. He ran down. I went up. I walked up to the 6th deck by myself to where I met someone in the stairwell, and we went out onto the roof. There really wasn't much else different you could do. I suppose I could have chosen to decide to walk down and come outside the building. That might be the only difference I might have decided to make, but I verbally said out loud, well, he's gone down. I need to go up because I didn't know where he went. And so I suppose that would be the only difference is, could I have walked down the steps, and by the time I followed him, he would have moved on, and I could have gone out the emergency door and probably gotten a lot more help when I walked out. That's pretty much about it.
I understand. So how important is it to forgive a person that goes through a difficult or a tragedy?
Say that again to me.
How important is it, forgiveness? What role does that play for a person that goes through a difficult or a tragedy?
Forgiveness is really not about the other person. Forgiveness is really about yourself. When you are unforgiving and your heart becomes hard and bitter towards someone else, a situation, you're the only one harmed. They're not harmed. You're the one who is hurting. And if you don't forgive and you don't let it go and let God have it and walk you through revealing to you the purpose of why you're walking through what you're walking through, you will have it forever. I have a family member who is living that very journey of unforgiveness. Unforgiveness for himself, unforgiveness of others, and he is hurting, and he is angry, and he is bitter, and it just breaks my heart. So forgiveness is really for you to release it. And sometimes we do things that we have to forgive ourselves. We have to let it go and turn it over and let God have it so that he can heal us to become useful for his purpose down the road.
I understand. Where do you find your strength and resiliency?
I think you've heard it. It comes from my faith. There is nothing. I was pretty grounded before I was shot, and I believe God knew I was ready for him to use me for the next level of purpose. After the shooting, I would tell you that my faith grew and grounded it into complete trust. I worry for nothing, and I mean that. I don't worry about anything in my life. God's got me. He showed me he was present. I was at peace, and I know that if he can walk me through that and bring purpose in my life so I can bring goodness to others, resiliency is praying through and walking through the difficulty that God brings to you, seeing what purpose you can do for others. He's made us to be relational, and our struggles help others make it through their struggles. And so I'm very grounded in my belief and trust in who God is, and that's where it comes from. And it is unshakable, absolutely unshakable.
I hear you. So Psalms 23, do you know what that is off the top of your head?
Well, I know parts of it. Though I walk through a valley shadow of death, I shall feel no evil. It's that passage, but I've not memorized it, so I'm a failure on that part. But it's walking through the shadow of death, through the valley of death, and not fearing for that evil that might come to you in it. God's, rod and staff will comfort you, right?
Yeah.
And that's what that verse is really about.
I understand. Yeah, the Marines have a different take on that verse. And I won't go there, but it starts out with, walk through the valley of the shadow of the death, I fear no evil because I'm the meanest, baddest mutt. I'll stop there. But anyway, Jennifer, you're a warrior. You are a warrior, dear. So with that being said, it's been an honor and a privilege to have you with us today. Hope you can stop back by in the future and we can do this again.
I hope so, sir. Thank you for your kindness.
Thank you, too. You're awesome. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, this is Lawrence J. King. Get out there and get a copy of Jennifer's amazing book called Standing Still and the Culture of a Mass Shooting. a Navy Yard shooting survivor that never should have happened. But because it did, she survived and lived to tell about it. It's a good book. She's a good lady. And this is Lawrence J. King, out of the house. Tune in next time when you hear me say, thank you, thank you, thank you, Book Talk Radio. Have a good day. Bye now.